the vibes. Oh, it's been a while since I've said that. Welcome back to the Hoop Genius podcast, brought to you by NBA 2K24. We've missed you, BJ. Been missing you as well, my brother. Did you have a nice little trip?
Yeah, you know, just love family time. So it's all good, and I appreciate it. I missed everyone, and we're back.
Yes. Shout out to everyone who sent me a message wondering where the podcast is. Don't worry. BJ took a little recharging time, so he's ready and on top form for the NBA playoffs, which are here very soon. But in the meantime, it's my favorite time of the week. We're going to be answering your questions. And as always, this show is brought to you by our wonderful friends at NBA 2K24. And while BJ was away, I racked up so many hours on NBA 2K24. I've been playing in the rec. BJ, you know, in real life, I'm about the same height as you. But in NBA 2K, I finally get to live my dreams of being 7'2".
Okay.
So I've been trying to grab a rebound.
You and Wimby.
Yeah. Yes. I played a career game against him and I cooked him. I'm the rookie of the year in my world. But we got some questions about the real NBA we're going to answer today. The first one comes in from VTech Genie. He says, I don't seem to understand why it's necessary for injured players to be present at games. Is it mandatory or part of an NBA player's contract? Also, some players don't seem to follow this rule because I don't seem to have cited Embiid during his injury. Now, my understanding of that is that it's not mandatory for injured players to join teams on games on the road, but at home, they should be at the game unless they're rehabbing away from the team. BJ, what's the ruling on this issue?
Well, a lot of times, you know, Mo, you know, it's kind of one of those unwritten rules. You know, you want to be around as much as you possibly can. And if you are capable of being around, right, meaning you don't have a knee injury, you don't want people walking on an injured knee or injured ankle or an injured toe, something like that. So, you know, it's just a matter of keeping people engaged. You know, the thing, Mo, is I don't know if you've ever had a injury where you had to be out for a substantial amount of time.
Way too many to,
you know, count. you want to keep people engaged and you want to keep people in the team framework. So I always thought it was a good thing when you have an injury to be around as much as you can, support your team, not just physically, but emotionally, spiritually. You want to be around and give those guys all the support, even though you may not get out there. So it's kind of one of those things where you hear this word culture and you want to bring team camaraderie and all those things. So I always think now, and I thought it back then, that it was a good thing to have your teammates around as much as they can, as much as they're capable of being around, especially when they're injured. But if you have a lower extremity injury, it's really tough to get around because you want to stay off of that as much as you can.
Absolutely. Missy B says that her days are really lonely without the Hoop Genius episodes. Missy, we missed you too. Don't worry. We're back in full force. Freddie K wants to know, what was BJ's favorite championship out of the three he won? Love the podcast, guys. Well, BJ, can I guess what your answer will be?
Yes, you may.
I believe BJ will have either one or two answers. Either he'll say he can't pick between the three, or he'll say it was the first one that he won. BJ, which one was your favorite?
Without question, was the first. And you didn't know what to expect. You didn't know how to react. You didn't know how to act. You didn't even know what was going on. It was just a blur. Okay. It was just like, we won one game and we won two games. And it was still like, wow, we're two games away from maybe winning a championship. And then you won a third game. And it was like, okay, well, how does it feel? And then I just remember us not knowing how to close it out because we didn't know how that was we didn't know how to feel about it. You know, it was just a first. Everything was a first. And I remember the celebration. It was awkward because we didn't know whether to smile, cry, be happy, congratulate each other. You know, it was just, you didn't want it to end. I just remember, but we were on such a run, on such an emotional high that we didn't want the game to end. It's like, you didn't want the season to end. You know, it's like, I remember one of the things I vividly remember is winning the championship in LA, going back home to Chicago. And then the following day, you know, we get to the airport and people were there to greet us. And that was great. And I remember they put the water over the plane. You know, they gave us a an amazing celebration at the airport. And I remember, Mo, I was really sad I didn't have practice. So I didn't really know what to do. Like, Mo, so it's like June and I didn't know what to do. I was like, well, the celebration wasn't until like 2 or 3 days later. So, Mo, it was like a day or two.
Vegas, my brother, head to Vegas.
No, Mo, it was like, it was just odd. Like, yeah. There was no practice. I wasn't around the guys. I wasn't on the bus. It was just, I remember thinking and sitting in my apartment, like all by myself, like, what am I going to do with myself? I don't have anywhere to go right now. So, I remember what I did. I went to the gym. I just went to the gym.
That's a championship mentality.
No, well, I went to the gym and played like pickup with some guys. Like, I didn't know what to do with myself because I was like I had played all this, you know, you play, it was just such a long season and it was like mid June and it was like, well, what else am I going to do? So I went to the gym and played pickup and until the parade. So that was my post-game celebration. But I remember it was a great time. But it was really sad when it ended because, I mean, Mo, it was like you were the best and you didn't want to stop. So it was a great feeling.
I respect it. Tommy wants to know, how can teams like OKC and the Rockets be rewarded for growing their young players instead of losing because of the tax? The best basketball podcast right now. Well, thank you very much, my friend. And they are rewarded by being able to offer players contracts with their bird rights. So yes. If you draft a player, you can offer the player more years and a higher salary than any other team. The tax is unavoidable. This is a business at the end of the day.
Right.
And
right.
If you want to be the best, you got to pay the price, unfortunately, for some small markets. But
yeah.
I always have the philosophy, if you're going to have an NBA team as an owner and you're not willing to pay the price to win, you don't deserve to win. Because why else should you sell the team to someone who wants to own the team who's happy to pay those prices?
Well, here is the thing when you're talking about, you know, the luxury tax, so forth, and now you have the first apron and the second apron and all that stuff, and we don't have time to get into that today. But I will say this, teams who draft well, they are rewarded. So, you know, the Houston Rockets thus far, they look like they have an opportunity to really retain those players. I mean, they've drafted, in my opinion, very well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, here's our favorite word, Mo. You talking about roster construction. Now hey. Now they have to construct the team. They've drafted incredibly well. They've made a huge jump. Those players look like they're going to be really good players. Now you got to figure out which one you're going to begin to build around. That's the core of the work, right? Mm-hmm. You can draft good players. However, you got to draft the core players and then build around it and field around it under the financial constraints that your owner will put on the team in order to build their roster. So,
and because you drafted them, you have the ability to trade them as well. If
yes.
You don't want to pay them the salaries that they want. So
yeah, so, you know, it's one thing to draft well, but it's another thing to actually retain those players that you choose to retain and build around it in a successful manner. So I think the latest, you know, rendition of this has been the Golden State Warriors. They mm-hmm. drafted Steph Curry, they drafted Klay Thompson, they drafted Draymond Green, and they built around those three, and they were able to retain those three players and then build around it, and they've had a tremendous amount of success. So
and
I think
drafted
that's
a bunch of the role players that fitted into the team as well.
Yeah, so, you know, when you draft Kevon Looney and you draft these guys,
Harrison Barnes, even on Harrison the most Barnes, recent ones, you know, you had Jordan Poole and Moody and Kuminga all making contributions towards that championship. Right.
So, you know, you get rewarded. So it's not all loss for drafting well. You don't just lose everyone. You just got to figure out which one you're going to build around and then be able to provide whatever the constraints your owner will have. And but you need those players, whoever you commit to perform and perform at a high level.
Absolutely. Tally Wakanay says, very serious, important question. Coke or Pepsi? Now, I don't think BJ drinks fizzy drinks.
I don't drink any soda. Not because of any dietary restrictions. I just prefer to drink my water and my juice, and that's it. I don't drink coffee.
I don't drink juice. Anything. I don't drink coffee. Yeah. I don't drink tea. I just drink water. Wow. However,
no tea.
I am open to drinking anything that a sponsor would want us to drink. So, you know, if there's any sponsors out there, my only condition is the drinks can't have sugar in. Shout out to Eddie Abu. Can't be drinking okay. those calories. But I'm open to trying some new drinks. And okay. if anyone wants to be the official drink of the Hoop Genius podcast, if you're listening, okay. I'm okay. open to it. I'm open to it. But he also has another question. He says, does BJ have any up-and-coming players he's following and keeping track of that he thinks has a real future? NBA or college levels, names that we won't usually hear. Anyone going under the radar for you, B?
Well, my favorite player, my youngest son and I think we're official fans of the DJ Burns from North Carolina State.
Yes, sir.
We are official fans.
Yes, sir.
Of DJ Burns. And we were talking about him all day today, actually, about we can't wait to the Final Four so we can watch DJ mm-hmm. Burns. So shout out to DJ Burns. He is our favorite collegiate player. I'm a huge Caitlin Clark fan, being the University of Iowa, watching her, what she's doing. She's in the Final Four as well for on the women's side. So I think DJ Burns, though, is a name you should probably watch. He's a fascinating player. I don't know how it's going to work out for him, but I can tell you this. He is a very talented young man, and I'm just keeping a close eye on him because, you know, I like big guys. Well, I got trapped in this little body, but I like the big guys. You know, I think I was supposed to be a 7-footer.
Same.
Yeah,
same,
I was supposed to be a 7-footer.
So. Speaking of players under the radar, and, you know, speaking of players under the radar, and everyone in the past few weeks has been keeping tabs of the women's NCAA action. There's a player over here for the London Lions, Holly Winterburn for the London Lions ladies team,
okay.
who has been absolutely fantastic. And I think that a WNBA team needs to give her a call this okay. you know, before their season gets underway and right. see if there's any synergy there, because she's got some real talent. She's a real baller. They're in the final of the Euro Cup over here, which is okay. a first for a British team. So shout out to the ladies in London doing their thing. Salute to you. I'm rooting for you all the way. I'm going to try to go down to see the final. I think it's next week. But anyway, we keep moving. AG wants to know, how important is it for teams who are stuck in NBA purgatory, like Brooklyn and the Chicago Bulls, to make a move in the offseason? Now, if you're wondering what NBA purgatory is, that's when you're not good enough to compete in the playoffs, but you're not bad enough to get one of the top picks in the NBA draft. So, BJ, for those teams, how important is it to make a move in the offseason?
Well, you know, I always like to, you know, just lay out, you know, kind of what the facts are and share with our audience the facts, and then you draw your conclusions. But this one is my own personal opinion here. The worst place to be, Mo, in my opinion, is that 7 through 10. That's the worst place to be.
Mm-hmm. Purgatory.
But that's where yeah, we are. That's
the playing, you know, spots.
The 11 through 15 is okay for me, because you're going to get, you know, it allows you to get a lottery pick, and that's where the best players or the best young players traditionally have been in the NBA. But that 7 through 10 is a tough place, because you're just good enough to be in the middle of the pack, and you're not at the top and you're not at the bottom, and you're just kind of stuck right in there. And there's really no way for you to get good other than free agency, which will
or trades.
Well, you get in trade, but, you know, more than likely, you're just going to get the same player back that you're giving up.
The Chicago Bulls, for example, they have some good pieces. They just don't necessarily fit together in the best way. And the other thing about trades is sometimes you can make a trade and it's addition by subtraction, because a player who's on your roster currently can improve by means of trading away another player who might be getting more touches or might be playing in the same position as them. And you might uncover a star in their team by trading away a different player on your roster.
It's possible. Anything is possible. However, you know, when you get those unlikely contributions, like, for instance, Tyrese Halliburton, you know, I think we all thought he was going to be a pretty good player. Did we think he was going to be a player that was going to be starting in the All-Star game? I didn't see that this soon.
Well, I mean, since the All-Star game, he might have come back to reality.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I didn't. But sometimes you get those unexpected players who just blossom, right? They blossom, and all of a sudden now it turns your organization around. Again, I just don't like to be in that 7 through 10. I want to be at the top. Or I want to be able to say, okay, here's where we're at. Let's take a great look at what we have here and then be able to build, you know, from the draft, because the players or the teams that draft well, they are rewarded. That's just the way the system is set up. You know, you get a free agent. Now that puts you into the salary, you know, into all of those, you know, puts you into the luxury tax, so forth and so on. So I just think the purgatory that we're talking about here is the middle of the pack. You know, right now, you know, for instance, Chicago right now is a team that comes to mind, right? They have a max player, and your max player, and I'm not saying Zach LaVine's not a max player. I'm saying he is a max player, but you need to be available. That's just what it is. And when your max player is not available or is not performing as a max player, it really puts the organization behind the eight ball. And the Chicago Bulls come to mind because they have Zach LaVine is a really good player. You also have a really good player in DeMar DeRozan. However, how good are they when you start comparing them to the other players in their conference? You know, when you start comparing them to Jason Tatum and Joel Embiid and all of the other players, Giannis and all those guys, now you start saying, are they somewhere at the very best six? But most likely they probably will finish where they're currently at, somewhere 7 through 10 in today's climate. And it's not to say that it won't get better, but that's a team that comes to mind when I think of that question. I thought that was a really good question, by the way.
21K Wake says, OKC look like they could potentially be the next team on the come up. What pieces, if any, do they need to achieve a championship? I think we've spoken about this a couple of times. They really need a five to put alongside Chet Holmgren, I believe. But aside from that, just keep developing the guys that you got, because they got some real talented players.
Yeah. You know, I've said this before. I like their team because they've drafted extremely well. You know, Sam Presti, he has drafted terrific, all right? I mean, he drafted Kevin Durant. He's drafted Russell Westbrook. He's drafted James Harden. You know, now he's drafted Chet Holmgren. I always get his name. Jalen Williams? Is it Jalen Williams?
Yep. There's Jaylen two Jalen Williams as well.
And then, you know, he's drafted extremely well. Now, you know, their best player is Shea Alexander, who he got in a trade, which he – remarkable trade for the Oklahoma City Thunder. Okay, he's first-team All-NBA player. Now it gets down to the bread and butter of when you're talking about now sitting in that president general manager seat. Now you got to build this team, and you're going to have to commit to these young players financially. You know, I've said it before. I think they're three main guys: Chet Holmgren, Jalen Williams, and Shea Alexander. I think those are the three from what I could see from afar. Now you got to figure out how to build around those guys, but take advantage of the strengths of those players. All of those players are big at their position. They all have length. I just happen to think that Shea is a lead guard. He's a tremendous size as a lead guard, right? He could post up all of the other little small guards in this league. I think Jalen Williams is a two guard. Why? Because he has tremendous size. He's around 6'7" or so. And then I think Chet, as a 7-footer, as a four man, suddenly now gives them an extremely tall and will expose their greatest asset, which is their length. Now, with that team, I think you got to figure out how to build and complement those three. That's just me looking from the outside. I don't know. I'm not there. And of course, when you're there, you will know your team. So I'm going to defer to Sam Presti on that end, as far as that. But in looking at it, I think you build around the length and their ability to defend. I think they could switch, but more importantly, I think they cause problems. Mm-hmm. Shea Alexander is a lead guard. I mean, this guy is just phenomenal. And then you have Chet, who could roam. And then you start, then you figure out your five and your three. But I think you have to complement the size and length of the other three players in order to really maximize who they could be or what they should be now that we've seen them compete at this level. Now, they have a great team because they can play during the regular season because of all the things we just mentioned. However, once the playoffs begin, I think we will see who they really are. They're a young team, and we can't forget this. They have no playoff experience. Mm-hmm. So I don't really know how they're going to respond. I mean, this could be a team, Mo, that exits in the first round. They could finish at the top of the Western Conference and then exit early in the first round. And I still would consider this season a success for them because I don't know, and I didn't anticipate them being where they're currently at now. So it'll be fascinating to watch. I think we will learn a lot about them. Hopefully they will advance because it's always great to learn while you're winning. But it's going to be tough, and we're going to see how good this team really is.
Absolutely. He has another question about the draft, but we'll answer that around draft time. But Big Con wants to know, what does BJ think about the latest British NBA player, Tosun Awuma, who has played for your Detroit Pistons?
I can't say I'm too familiar with it, with this game. I don't have to continue to watch. But you know what? He has an enormous opportunity there up there in Detroit. He has a great opportunity to play, showcase, and there's playing time.
Okay. Well, here's the thing I want to say. Everyone saw that highlight of Anthony Edwards. You know that clip where he's pivoting right. around. Number one, he traveled. He moved his pivot foot. Number two,
Mo, this is the NBA, Mo.
Number two, he was scoring on Tolosan in that clip. However, in that game, he only scored 9 points.
Right.
So my boy must be doing something right. Shout out to the UK ballers. Yes. Matt McD4 wants to know if you and BJ could add a rule to the NBA, what would it be? BJ, you're commissioner for the day. What rule are you adding?
What rule am I adding? I would like to see goaltending.
We have goaltending.
No, I'm just saying I would like to change the rule of the current.
How would you change it?
Just like it is in Europe.
Mm-hmm. So you can hit the ball off the rim.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I want to give some advantage to the defense. It's the way the game is played now. There's no defense.
Well,
my rule
that I'd add would massively bring an advantage to the defense. I want flopping to be an automatic ejection. If you flop, get the hell out of here.
That's what I'd do.
If I was, then we're not going to see this foolishness no more. We'll review it. And if it's a flop, get the hell out of here.
Okay. You know what? Okay, Mo, this is going to take me, because I'm glad this question came about, because when I watch the game and I try to watch it from the lens of saying, here's the game and the game is just going to evolve, right? You know, you watch the guys in the 60s and then you watch them in the 70s, and you just watch the game evolve. But you know what's been very significant as I've been watching the game? Because I get really upset when I hear this generation, you know, talk about the previous generation. And I always get upset when I hear the previous generation say, talk about this generation. It's like, why? Like, why are we trying to? It's like, okay, let's just look at it for what it is.
Yeah.
You know what? You know what's really amazing when you watch the game, Mo? Okay. One, the rules have changed. Okay. So when you're making these comparisons, it's not really a comparison because the rules have changed. So the game in the 80s and the 90s is a totally different game than what you're watching now. But you know what's really significant is the refereeing has really changed.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I was watching this highlight of Allen Iverson. And it was amazing for me to watch it. And the reason what made me watch it more was because my youngest son now, he wants to learn how to dribble. And we were doing, you know, he's 8. So, you know, we're just doing the basic ball handling dribbling. You know, he just wants to learn how to dribble. And he was at basketball camp and he was showing me here and he wanted to practice and doing these things. But then I was watching Allen Iverson dribble and I thought, what an advantage it was to be able to like kind of carry the ball when you're dribbling.
Mm-hmm.
So I started watching Allen Iverson and then I went and watched the Dallas Mavericks and I said, wow, Kyrie, you know, he carries the ball. And then I went and watched Jamal Crawford. I was like, that's about the time it really started changing when Jamal Crawford and these guys kind of got in. And then I started watching Tim Hardaway and I was like, oh, wow, his hand, he was dribbling on top of the ball. And then I was just watching all of the players. And I thought, Mo, to myself, if you could carry the ball like the guards do today, that's a huge advantage when you're playing. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying, Mo, the previous generation wasn't allowed to play that way because of the refereeing of the game. The biggest change has been the interpretation of the rules of the game, Mo. Like, Kieran, you'll see it called every now and then. But, Mo, you weren't allowed to do that in the previous generations. And how different would it be if you were able to play carrying the ball? By the rules of that era, that was a carry. Now, the referees, Mo, now, suddenly now, I want to start talking to the referees. Because I want to know, how did the interpretation of just that one action, that changed the game probably more than anything. And if you were allowed to do how these guys are doing, like, Bo, of course you can do things that you couldn't do because you weren't allowed to do that just by the rules itself. So, you know, I think the referees, Bo, I want to get the referees on the show. Because how did that happen? Like, I don't remember it being like a thing, like, we're just not going to carry it. But it's just, I remember one of those, it was just, it kind of gradually, that was just kind of how it evolved. Where suddenly now, but when you watch, like, for instance, Luka Doncic, like, no one was allowed to dribble that way.
Yeah. The game has changed.
The game has changed.
That's what we can say.
Well, I don't know if the game has changed. I think the interpretation and how we enforce the rules have changed. I think the players have always pushed the limits of the rules. But it's just like Hakeem Olajuwon. Like, you couldn't call travel on him every time. Reggie Miller.
It's like, I saw a clip of Dominique Wilkins do a Eurostep and they called him for a travel.
And now every time down, you're going to see a guy try Euro. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Like, Ginobili, I was just thinking, like, God, Ginobili probably would have gotten away with that in that era. You know, the Eurostep.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just things, you know what I mean? I mean, when AI came in with the crossover, I remember vividly every coach said that was a carry. When he came in with that, because that was a huge advantage, you know? So that would be interesting to just, you know, listen, that's the way it is. I'm cool with that. However, I think the interpretation of the rules and how they are called really, you know, I think it gives some players an advantage and some players, you know, put them at a disadvantage. And I think the defense currently now is at a disadvantage in the way the rules are called today. And that's good for the offense. I mean, that's awesome for the offense.
Mando wants to know, which five current players would you love to see in a horse contest?
In a horse?
Yeah, because the other day we saw Steph and Luka shooting from half court before the game in their warm-up. So I think Steph and Luka definitely, they 100% have to be in. And Kevin Durant as well.
Yeah, I think KD would fit in.
I think the Joker as well.
Yeah, because
he loves horses. He has to be in the horse contest.
I think those three for sure.
But Steph, Luka, KD, I got Jokic. And then I think maybe Trey would have to be in, I guess.
Trey Young, yes. Trey Young Dame, for sure.
Maybe. But
and Dame. That's a good five right there.
For the newer fans, go on YouTube and watch Kevin Durant versus Rajon Rondo in a game of horse. One of the best games of horses you will ever see.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Really? You got to watch that.
I think KD, Luka, Steph, Dame, and Trey Young. That would be interesting, actually.
Got to throw the big fella in, man. You can't have horse without Jokic, man. Come on.
You know what? I would watch that at All-Star Weekend. I would.
That's what I'm thinking.
I would watch that.
Absolutely.
I would watch that.
Absolutely. Pierce McGlinchey wants to know, are you a fan of the playing games or do you think it should go back to the top eight seeds automatically going through?
Well, I'm going to go against my... I'm always open to change. I thought the previous the original way was the way. Like, you want to reward people how they perform for the entire season. The play-in game, you know, I don't, you know, you're putting 10, you know, the top 10 teams.
No, I think the play-in is great, because look at the Western Conference. There's like, what, one or two games in between those. I think that the play-in should be there. However, there should be an amendment. If you are four games or more ahead of the team behind you, then you should automatically go through. Because then that does reward you for winning in the regular season and having enough wins to go ahead, of the other teams. Yeah. So, like,
I like the original. I like the original.
Right now,
I
but like right now in the Eastern Conference, if that rule was in place, Miami, they're sixth now, but Indiana and the Philadelphia 76ers would automatically qualify for the playoffs because the Bulls are five games behind the eighth seed. They don't deserve to be in the play-in. And in the West, on the other hand, the Lakers are only one game behind Sacramento. The Warriors are three games behind Sacramento. So I think there should be a play-in. So I think there should be some stipulation. And that's what they had when they originally brought the play-in in the bubble, was you had to be within a certain amount of games to trigger the play-in tournament. But now, as the moneymaker is sponsored, the play-in tournament has a sponsor who I won't name because they don't pay us. So who cares about them? But they have a sponsor, and it's extra games, extra ticket revenue for the teams, extra games on TV, meaningful games on TV for the networks who pay all this money for the league. So I don't think it's going away. I just think that there should be some sort of amendment in there. Finn Follows All says that he subscribes on Apple and thought he was missing something. I need a backup Mr. Armstrong on the show for when you're away. I'm going to tell you this. There's only one VJ Armstrong. There's a real name, no gimmicks. There's only one. Can't be no backups.
Yeah. Hey, I appreciate it. I appreciate the love. You know what? Yeah. It's great. This is great being able to do the show every day with my guy and do it for the people. So this
yes,
is
sir. Yes, sir. Well, that's another episode of the Hoop Genius Podcast. We'll be back on Monday with Mr. Scott Perry. So we'll be back to our regular scheduled program.
Parking lot Perry. Parking yes, lot Perry.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And BJ, next week is the penultimate week of the NBA season.
Oh, wow. It's most time. Most
and
time of
March
the year.
March Madness concludes. So it's now April Madness, whatever you want to call it. That'll be concluding as well. So stay locked in. We'll be right here. Appreciate each and every one of you. Thank you to everyone who's submitted their questions. If you want your question answered, join the Discord server. The link is in the description of the show. Come and join the community. Get your questions answered right here on the Hoop Genius Podcast. Appreciate each and every one of you. Make sure you subscribe, YouTube, Spotify, Apple. And until next time, you know the vibes. Get buckets.